To create a context for this talk today, I will remind you that we are in the middle of a series of 6 months that is discussing the law of God. That for this year, our overall theme for the year is the law and the love. And that this particular month, we are talking about the first step of the form of spiritual mind treatment, first step of the form of affirmative prayer that we call spiritual mind treatment, which is recognition that God is. And our topic this morning is recognizing God is. And so I am thrilled to be on this panel with Reverend John and Pita, who I know with me spend much of their time in life contemplating what God is and recognizing God everywhere they can find it. And so I really look forward to hearing what they have to say about it. But I'm not used to talking for 5 to 7 minutes. I'm used to having a lot longer to talk about what I think about the topic of the month. Judy did the longer talk this month, and it was wonderful. And Steve brought his music to contribute to the beauty of that, and I got to hear it this week, and it was exquisite. So I was looking for shortcuts that would allow me to express more powerfully in the time that I have what I believe about what recognizing God is means to me. And I realized that on the website there are hours, literally, of me talking about the qualities of God. And that if you haven't heard them and you want to hear them, you can just go to the Sterling Study Group website and tap into what I believe about God as light and love and power and peace and so many other topics that we covered last year. So then I thought, well, if I don't talk about what God is to me, what do I want to talk about? And the topic really jumped out at me, the three words that were chosen for the topic of this month, because it's recognizing God is. And the important word to me is recognizing, because God is, whether we recognize it or not. And so it becomes, recognizing God is, becomes a perceptual issue. And the best story I know about perception and best analogy for recognizing God is the story of the blind man and the elephant. So I bet most of you have heard it before. Would you be willing to raise your hand if you've heard the story of the blind man and the elephant before? So almost every. Oh, good. Gives me an excuse to tell it again. Bear with me, all of you who know it.
We love it.
It's a great story. There were a group of blind men who were wandering about the city together, and they encountered an elephant, which was a new experience for them. And they had no understanding of what an elephant was, so each went to the elephant and encountered the elephant in his own way. And one grabbed the tail and said, "The elephant is like a rope." Hi, welcome. I'm telling the story of the blind men and the elephant. And so we have these blind men that are wandering around the street, and they encounter an elephant. And each of them encounter the elephant in a different place on the elephant. And one encounters the elephant at the tail and says, the elephant is just like a rope. And one encounters the side of the elephant and says, no, the elephant is like a wall. And the next encounters the leg of the elephant and says, no, the elephant is like a tree trunk. And the next encounters the ear of the elephant and says, the elephant is like a palm leaf. And one encounters the trunk of the elephant and says, the elephant is like a hose. And each of them begin to squabble and argue because they have an experience of the elephant. They know what the elephant is. And yet what they know is different than what the others know. And so the understanding of the elephant comes from a direct experience that is utterly true. But what is not true is that the other direct experiences are not true. That each experience is true, and the collective experience, were they to share instead of compete with their experiences, would be bigger. Their vision of what the whole elephant would be so much more complete if they could put their pieces of the puzzle together rather than saying, my experience invalidates your experience. And of course, the analogy is that what spirit is, what God is, what non-physical is so much bigger than any of us can encompass or encounter. But each of us have a valid personal access to that experience of the divine, to that aspect of ourselves that is non-physical, to that aspect of the universe that is spirit. And so as each of us perceive, recognize that God is, we come up with an explanation of that divine experience that we have. And Daniel Namod, in one of his songs, says, call it God, call it spirit, call it Jesus, call it Lord, call it Buddha, Mahamula, Hashem, or heaven's door. Call it, what other words does he come up with? Music and time and mother, father. So many other words. I can't remember the verse. It's the moment of creation. It's an everlasting peace. It's the freedom of forgiveness. It's the sweetness of reliefs. It's the joy of inspiration. It's the sunshine on your face. It's the birthright of all nations. It's the boundlessness of space. It's the beauty of a baby, the serenity of sleep. It's all God. There is no aspect of life that is not God. But how do we perceive it? How do we recognize it? How do we experience it and embody it for ourselves? That's the question. How do we perceive God? And so in the short time that I have today, I wanted to, yet again, for the 20th time for many of you, share the map of the scale of human consciousness from David Hawkins. I trust that it's new to a couple today, because this is such a profound tool that helps us see seeing in a whole new way. And what this is a picture of what David Hawkins in his research on human consciousness perceived as the experience of consciousness from the very lowest consciousness that can sustain life, which is shame and misery, to the highest consciousness of oneness with all life, the cosmic consciousness that he associates with Jesus and Buddha. And what he has done is outline the way people look at life from each of those in the life view column, the way they look at God in each of those states of consciousness in the God column, and the emotions that they tend to feel around that experience in the emotion column. But today I just wanted to direct your attention to the God view column. That a fearful person sees a punitive God, a grieving person sees a disdainful God. In fact, an apathetic person may feel a condemning God, but Hawkins also says that at that level of consciousness, people perceive that God is dead, that there is no God, that there is a space of blankness there and loss. At the level of pride, there also is no God, or an indifference to God, no problem with ignoring God altogether. But then at the level of courage, there is an open-mindedness about perceiving God, and on to reason perceiving a wise God, because reason appreciates understanding and reason, and so sees God as wise and understanding and reasonable. person at the level of love sees a loving God, and joy sees a God of oneness. And so God doesn't change. God is God, depending on how we perceive it. But there are all of these different potential ways to encounter God, depending on where we are encountering God from. God changes depending on where we stand and where we look from, not from where God is. Because God is infinite and eternal, which are time and space-based words. And God is beyond time and space, as well as present everywhere and always, right here and right now. So what I wanted to say is that all of us are like the blind men and the elephant. All of us have a valid experience of God, even if we believe that God is dead, or God is unavailable, or God is indifferent to us, or God is non-existent. That is a valid experience of God from our perspective. And every religion has a valid experience of God. So one of the things I like best about the first Church of Religious Science I went to is that in our prayers we blessed all paths every week. It's something we haven't done here as a practice, but it's something that I do in my own personal practice. I believe that blessing all paths and letting go of the fighting with other people's perception of what God is and focusing on my perception and the expansion of my ability to see and taking what I can and understand from other people's perceptions expands my horizon, expands my capacity to know. And so whether I study David Hawkins or Abraham or Buddhism or mindfulness or Hinduism, I have the opportunity to feel someone else's experience of God and validate that experience with my respect and my reverence and incorporate that with my respect and my reverence for myself and my own understanding. And if it's too far off my understanding, I can't get there. And I just bless them and release them. But if it's close to my understanding, I can expand. And so I continue to endeavor to expand my perception and feel that loving, wise oneness that is meaningful to me at this time in my evolution of understanding. And that's all I have time for, so thanks for listening, and thanks for accepting once again the map of human consciousness as a tool. And I pass to Reverend John.
Thank you, Connie. As a musician, as a teacher of yoga, and as a very vulnerable human being, I look to the tools I have for my perception of God. And I'm always looking for proof. I am looking for validation. And all of my fellow humans are probably nodding in agreement. I look at the universe and I see an enormous range of possibilities that are all connected with each other. Mm-hmm. If I look at the basic building block of an atom, physicists say that if the nucleus of an atom were the dot over an I, that the first electron might be about a mile away. We have an enormous amount of space in atoms, and they're small, they're submicroscopic. And yet, we're sitting here. I'm sitting on my chair. Why don't I fall between the atoms of the chair, like a deck of cards being rubbed against another deck? Eventually the cards will interlock and become one deck. Why doesn't my behind do that in the chair? Nobody can really answer that satisfactorily. And yet there's incredible movement, incredible speed of movement with these atoms. They're moving and yet they stay integral unto themselves. I always marvel at that. We take the next step up in matter from atoms becoming molecules becoming bigger macrocules. Eventually we get to movement that we can see and sense like sound. When we hear a sound, a musical sound is an object vibrating, whereas a vibrating string is many, many atoms made into metal and silk, whatever the strings are composed of, and yet that movement doesn't shake the atoms apart. Those atoms are locked together under enormous tension, and that movement of that collection of molecules produces a sound. Moving other collections of molecules we call air. That air vibrating against all of our molecules. It's an incredible concerto, an incredible musical composition that happens even with the simplest of sounds, similar to the way the vibrating column of air is moving when I'm playing the flute. Others of you play instruments which we experience as movement. And all of life is movement. We can take that movement and look at a square foot of soil out here in the landscaping, the artwork of the landscaping. We can see an incredible amount of decay and rebirth in that square foot. Those cycles are longer than a vibration of a string or an air column. Yet that movement is in harmony with the faster movements we can see, we can hear. We see color and light as vibration. And that sound we hear, those are slower vibrations. If we slow sound down, we eventually get to a place where it's not a musical sound anymore. It's more complex, but yet slower. Eventually we get to cycles of life that are very slow. The one we're most intimate with would be the heartbeat, the respiration. There's a ratio there. They're interlocked. This ratio is intelligible on the level of biology, medicine, body work. We work with those vibrations. Slower vibrations become hunger and satiation. They become sleep and wakefulness. They become recreating and working. Those rhythms become birthdays. Those rhythms become decades. All of these vibrations of life, although we cannot hear them, I believe they are perceptible to a divine mind that can feel and hear the whole thing, from the movements of atoms, to the movements of speech and music, to the movements of life, and the passing of life, and the rebirth of life, to include the passage of whole planetary systems, passing those into the past, rebirth of stars. All of this is interlocked into a huge concerto, a huge composition. And so for me, the question is not only, is God, but that God is, and how may I perceive more fully this God, whether this God is Allah, or Jehovah, or Yahweh, or Factor X, or Brahman. All of these terms are feeble attempts by the human mind to try to grasp what already is and what is expressing itself in many, many ways, so that every mind that is open will be able to perceive this God. So with all of this movement, I will become still and pass to Pita. Thank you for listening.
Well, my friends, I was telling Connie that, oh God, I mean, these are two giants. What am I going to talk about? Hello! And I love giving talks because there are certain things that even a practitioner forgets sometimes. And it just brings you back. And you come to a new aha. And so I love doing this. And besides, my life has been incredibly busy, but it gives me a time while I'm driving to reflect. And then Judy, gave us a whole bunch of names. I mean, very impressive how God is. But she missed one that I was really very shocked. I was raised very Catholic. And when I started reading Ernest Holmes, it says God is stuff. How irreverent! How irreverent! But this is the real truth. God is stuff. This stuff is everywhere. And I found something, in Ernest Holmes that it says, that God is energy channeled into specific and tangible form. So I says, wow, interesting. Then guess what? I went to school, I promise you I went. And I saw something from Einstein that says that energy is, the formula is E equals MC. That means that the energy and the physical form are the same and interchangeable. I says, wow! I went to school and I didn't get that. My poor father paid for my education, but anyhow, since I didn't get it until now. And then I got into a Science of Mind magazine, and it's talking about the mandala. And I tried to do a copy, but it was only a quarter of that, and I tried to make a copy, and it was not very perfect, but mandala is something like this that I think, is an oriental way that maybe even our sign has it. It's like, if I do something like this, you are always going to point to the center. I don't know why, but this is how our eyes look. They always look behind that. And God is the same, going into inside to the outside. It's everything in between, which I think is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this is, something that, all cultures have tried to, this hunger that we have to explain, the nature of God, has explained in so many ways. So, but the most amazing thing is, if we believe God is everything there is, and I love this first step of treatment, really is my sanity, regains my sanity completely. You say, God is all there is. And everything that is, whatever it is happening, that's not true. If I'm tired, if I'm sad, if I'm worrying, if I don't have money, all is all there is. And then in that minute, it's like my true north appears. And it's so incredible. I usually, when I don't need to go in the several step of treatments. My treatments are sometimes like, God is all there is, I center, thank you, bye.
Yep.
That's it. You don't need to do anything else. It's like you, that's why it's called remind. It means that you refocus your mind into the real thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is really very difficult for us to accept is that if God is everything there is, me and you are God. With all the innate qualities of God, we are love, we are peace, we are harmony, we are joy, we are abundance, we are prosperity. But we need to accept that. And Hermes Holmes says a wonderful phrase that says, do not be tied to your heritage. So we have access to our infinite wisdom to make our plans and do the right action. And he even says something very funny. He says, if you were born into a white American person in the United States, you don't seek Americanization. And I'm telling you because, I haven't got my papers too. So, but you don't seek that. So it really, really hit me very well. You're not trying to become a white person. You already are. Why can't we do this in the spiritual world? Why cannot we accept that we are God with all His qualities?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.